Hello, Bill.
Hello, Bill.
It's been a while since we've had you back on the Weekend Blog here at bloggingheads.tv. Why don't you reintroduce yourself to the crew?
Sure thing. My name is Bill Butler. I'm a writer and consultant in Washington, D.C. A long time ago, in another administration, I was a blogger for National Journal, where I wrote a column that was the first mainstream media news column about the blogosphere. That was called the Blogometer. Since about 2006, I've worked in social media, and actually just the last few months, I left my former employer, and I'm out on my own now, so I'm talking to you from my home office at the moment. I, as they say in Washington, I've hung out my own shingle, although in my case, I'm still nailing it up there. I guess that's about it.
And so where can folks find you?
So I still write a few blogs here and there. The one that I'm updating most often is, it's called The Wikipedian. Spoiler alert, it is about Wikipedia and how it works. But I'm also planning to refocus on writing about politics again, which I hadn't done as much over the past few years, including in some different formats, but I'll leave it there for now.
Excellent. And once again, I'm Bill Scheer with Campaign for America's Future at ourfuture.org and also liberaloasis.com, where I host the Liberal Oasis radio show podcast. And a word of warning, there's a yellow jacket nest in my house. so if you see me looking up a lot or getting up and hearing a loud smash on a window, I'm dealing with the repercussions.
Is it in the attic?
We don't know where it is yet.
But it's somewhere.
I have top professionals on the case. So first off, there's a slew of interesting races. You have, I think, 70-plus competitive House races, and over maybe a dozen competitive Senate races. But one that is a very interesting case study is the Orlando area, Alan Grayson's district. Alan Grayson, who is a first-term Democratic congressperson, shall we say very bombastic.
We shall say that.
And a lot of folks on the left have really embraced him as seemingly showing folks how it's done, not being namby-pamby, always staying on offense, not mincing words. And folks on the right have always looked at him as, loony left, over the top, et cetera, et cetera. So he has what may be one of the more controversial ads in this cycle.
Or two of them,
stirring up a lot of blog commentary. Do you want to take it from there?
You bet. I mean, so these ads, which have come out in the last couple of weeks, basically accuse his opponent, Dan, I'm almost suddenly forgetting his last name, of being...
Webster,
that's it. Of accusing him as being the American equivalent of the Taliban, nickname being Taliban Dan. And a second ad, which is drawn more attention probably this week, about his religious views and his views toward women. There is probably the ad we'll be talking about the most, I think, here is the current one, which quotes him as using the phrase "submit to me," and it looks like it could be taken out of context. And the fact of the matter is, as both factcheck.org have pointed out, as how Adam Serwer, a blogger who was otherwise favorably disposed to Alan Grayson, have called it to be it's the quote is misleading. In fact, if you watched The Daily Show last night, Jon Stewart played the entire video of the played a longer video of that quote, and we should link it in the side notes because it's worth looking at. It's nothing like that at all. It certainly he is a he interprets the Bible very conservatively, but at the same time he's kind of saying the opposite of what Grayson intends to show there.
And keep going.
Well, I mean, I know where you're going to go with this, and there's there's been disagreement, of course, over what he exactly meant. And who's the religion dispatches that interviewed somebody?
Sarah Posner.
That's right. You know, she talked to someone, you know, to get a kind of deeper view of it. And the closer you look at it, you know, you can go back and you can read it as, well, he still does believe that women should submit. That's just not the point he was making right here. And I think you have this problem where anytime you have to explain something in that level of detail, the point is already lost. Certainly once factcheck.org has weighed in and said, you know, you're wrong, and once bloggers on your own side are starting to get nervous, you've lost that point. And especially using the word Taliban certainly is reminiscent of a new book by Marcos Melitzis called American Taliban. And, of course, we could argue about how that's reminiscent of Jonah Goldberg's liberal fascism, and, of course, where that itself comes from, the, you know, charge against Republicans that you're fascists. This goes back years and years. Name-calling is nothing new. And here's my perspective on it from Grayson's for as far as it relates to Grayson. He's just not in the position to make it work for him. He is he's in a seat that, you know, did he not pick it up from Mark Foley, right? It's a Republican leaning district. And
I don't think it's Foley's.
It was not Foley's. Well, it certainly is
it's a quintessential swing district.
Yeah, yeah. You know, someone like Nancy Pelosi or somebody else from a very deep blue, you know, California district New York district. Obviously, there are Senator Pete Stark, good example. Pete Stark is a guy who could get away with doing that. Alan Grayson, I think, is, you know, he's probably going to find himself out of a job. And so I guess you could compliment him for, you know, being true to his fiery instincts. But if his intention is to return to the House in 2011, you know, this is probably not the way to do it. It's a way to make her name.
What's fascinating about Grayson's story, period,
yeah,
is the fact that it's a swing district. And mm-hmm. and sure. that he's always run as, you know, a real, you know, liberal fire breather. And liberals have often held up to say, this is how you do it. You don't necessarily win a swing district by trying to pull test your way to a mythical middle. If you stand on your ground and articulate your views very forcefully with conviction, you can win the center of your district that way. Now whether or not this ad is a good representation of how one could do that. Now, Pushing Rope is a great Florida blog who said Alan Grayson would have probably had an easy win over Republican Daniel Webster. Now, Webster's no centrist here. This is a real left-right race. And then he knocked Grayson for writing this very distasteful ad and saying this essentially was over the top. Now Grayson has his defenders in the liberal blogosphere, particularly at Daily Kos, Jed Lewison, for example, saying that this was not, at the end of the day, taking it out of context. And we can go back and forth on that a little bit, going back to Sarah Posner's post. But before we do that, the point I wanted to make here is that there are some folks that are still saying, essentially what Grayson's doing, if you look at all the ads he's done, all the campaigns, and what he's basically trying to do is a complete parallel to how a Karl Rove-style campaign would work, that you just hit hard all the time. Don't worry about where exactly the line is. Don't worry if it's a little rough around the edges. Play every possible pro-American card you can play. He's got one ad where he's literally got eight-year-olds chanting, Alan Grayson saved our schools. He's wearing an American flag tie, and when he's talking about his own stuff, you know, it's almost
happy warriors.
A patriotic
happy warriors
bludgeon.
Get elected.
What's that?
I say happy warriors get elected. You know,
right.
He's trying to adopt and say wrap himself in the flag. It's actually very reminiscent of when was it Saxby Chambliss defeated? Max Cleland, right? It's kind of a similar ad. If I went back to it, I think I would actually still find the Chambliss ad to be more defensible than this ad here in particular. I think that is interesting, certainly by calling Republicans the American Taliban, you know, that's trying to make Republicans seem un-American. There's a very interesting post by Eric Erickson at Red State, who is always a lot of fun and always knows how to kind of get a rise. His post referred to Grayson as an American Stalin. Of course, just continuing this ongoing, ever-rolling cycle of, you know, back-and-forth sniping.
Playing right into Jon Stewart's hands.
And if you watched last night, it was probably the biggest rant that Stewart has gone off against Democrats, hitting on Grayson, hitting on Obama, complaining.
You haven't seen a lot of Jon Stewart the past couple weeks.
So, pardon me?
You haven't seen a lot of Jon Stewart the past couple weeks. He is.
You know what? I admit I haven't. No, but at least I know that, you know, that is not his normal speed, but sometimes he kicks it into that gear, and, you know, it's entertaining to watch. So Erickson, you know, calls him American Stalin. Its tongue is firmly in cheek, you know, and says that Grayson has become the politician who attacked his opponent for having a thespian daughter. And he raises an interesting point to tie it back to the blogosphere a little, is that one of Grayson's, probably Grayson's most prominent aide, senior policy aide, is one Matt Stoller, who is one of the early bloggers at MightyD, a founder of Open Left, an occasional Blogging Heads contributor. But he's been out of the blogosphere for the past few years as he has been focusing on, you know, working for Alan Grayson. And not just Erickson, but other conservative bloggers, and plenty on Twitter as well a few nights ago. It's not been ignored that the style of those two Grayson ads sound a lot like Matt Stoller. And Erickson goes through a couple of his greatest hits, you know, or some of his more offensive statements.
Yeah, I don't think that's really a secret.
sure enough. It's just that it's not in the mainstream coverage. It's a blog angle to the issue that maybe helps explain where, you know, at the very least, Grayson and Stoller have, you know, a similar point of view on how to message. Like, obviously,
I think that's absolutely right. And of course, there are a lot of bloggers out there that are big Matt Stoller fans, and by transfer, it's Alan Grayson fan. So on one hand, I think there is a fairly wide acceptance in the liberal blogosphere that people, you know, politicians should be conviction politicians and stay on offense. But this particular ad is showing a cleave in how far do you take that logic.
Agreed.
Where you have Adam Sewer at the American Prospect, and then there were a number of American Prospect folks who have not been thrilled with Marcos and having an American Taliban title for his book.
Right.
That was unfair. And there was a lot of blogosphere pushback against the American Prospect for saying they were nitpicking it against Coe's and being completely obtuse. You have on the Florida level, I mentioned Pushing Rope. The blogger there took a swipe at another Florida blogger, Kenneth Quinnell, because Kenneth Quinnell was saying this Grayson ad is what every Democrat should be running. All Democratic ads should be like this. So, to the extent, if Pushing Rope is correct, that Grayson would have won if not for this ad, and obviously we don't know if that's true or not.
Sure.
In my mind, it sort of muddies the test case a little bit, in my view. Grayson had obviously been pretty, you know, pretty strong in his language up until this point, but this is probably the harshest thing that he's done. And now you don't have as clean.
Oh, no, there's a few.
Clean a case to assess, I think, at the end of the day. Although, of course, if he wins, then argues for, let's be like Karl Rove all day long, because obviously
more of
it doesn't matter if the details aren't quite right at all. You land on the first punch. Your point about explaining, it's the other guy had to explain, not you.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, though. I do think that there's a numbers game to be played here. And in a swing district, it's difficult to tell which way that'll go. As I say, I seem to recall it being more of a Republican-leaning district, so that is why I at least come at this with the thought that this is probably going to be a mistake. You know, if you look at what Rove did, like what the United States, I would venture to say, and I'd be surprised if you probably will disagree, but the United States is a center-right country. If you
I do disagree.
I thought you might. if you can, you know, if you can excite the people who are, if you can excite the people and, you know, raise that interest, if the numbers are there in your favor to begin with, you will probably come out better. I know there's a lot to be said for, you know, for shifting the center. And so Grayson clearly is trying to do that, probably a little bit too much. And I think that he's also probably he's out on his own. He's out on a limb here. Mm-hmm. No, you don't see that. You don't see Democrats behaving the way he is right now. And so I don't know if it makes him a test case or a canary in a coal mine.
Well, to get back to sort of the specifics of the ad and to get deeper into Sarah Posner's post at Religion Dispatches,
sure.
I think this is a fair way to characterize what's going on here. For Grayson to take a snippet of Webster's religious talk, where it sounds like he's sort of angrily commanding, submit to your husband.
Which is not what he's saying. That particular right. narrow context is wrong.
Right. When you broaden out to the larger 5-minute clip, what he was saying was to men, don't prey on that part of the Bible. If your wife wants to pray on that, you know, she can do that if she wants to. You pray on the things that you're responsible for.
Right.
And so the factcheck.org response was, you completely obliterated the context. You were saying the exact opposite thing. This ad is, you know, completely out of bounds. Sarah Posner then pulls back the lens farther and saying, well, just because he wasn't saying that men shouldn't directly prey on that line, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean he wasn't embracing that part of the Bible still. He still thinks that women should do this. So these women should submit. He just doesn't think you go about practicing your religion by sticking your finger in the woman's eye about it.
This sounds like Mike Huckabee to me, where Mike Huckabee is, you know, quite conservative, but he also does it with a smile, and, you know, people, you know, aren't threatened by it. Just saying that the Dan Webster is, you know, takes the Bible seriously is not a working campaign message.
Well, and that could well be true. You could do what Sarah Posner is doing and pull the lens all the way back and say, okay, he has a fundamentalist literalist reading of the Bible. People may not find that disqualifying. They may not necessarily believe it. They may believe the Bible literally themselves, but they may not find it a horrible that his personal religious view is to embrace that.
Right. And not only does he, you know, he believes in the Bible seriously, even those passages which are politically incorrect.
Right. I know you're not necessarily trying to do this, but I think you can interpret the Bible allegorically and also seriously.
Oh, I know. That's absolutely fair to say. So interprets it literally, but at the same time, though, he still, I think it would be wrong to call him a caveman on this because his attitude is, I'm not an expert in religion, but clearly so, but that he is approaching this, you know, fairly strict belief with kind of a somewhat modern, somewhat, you know, lighthearted point of view. Hey, let's not focus on the, you know, the hard, scary stuff. Let's take it seriously, but also let's, you know, let women should worry about that. We'll worry about ourselves. He's certainly not trying to be, you know, strict and commanding, and that is obviously what Grayson's trying to portray.
And by using the Taliban moniker is to imply that he wants to impose his religious views on everybody else.
Perhaps stone people to death.
And, you know, perhaps he does on issues such as, reproductive issues, and gay rights issues.
Could be.
It doesn't necessarily mean that by saying this line, he's saying, I want the entire country to be forced, all the women in this country to be forced to submit to their husbands. Maybe he does, but you couldn't take that from that one quote. And as Adam Serwer said, acknowledging what Sarah Posner was saying, okay, because he made a lie that said it was flat and inaccurate, and say, okay, well, maybe, you know, Posner's got a point too, but he said, as ugly as I might find Webster's religious views, it seems obvious to state he's not trying to force them on other people through violence, which is obviously what a Taliban monitor would suggest.
Right. It's just a catchy thing. It's just name-calling. That's part of the real problem.
It's literally name-calling.
It's not that it's The problem is not that he's a conviction politician. It's that he's using dumbed down, inaccurate rhetoric to do so. If Grayson hadn't been to rights...
He wouldn't be the first politician to win with name-calling, though. Name-calling has succeeded many a time in the past.
But if the name-call... I think in this case, the name-calling was not... You know, it was inapt. It was not... It did not have Dan Webster dead to rights. And in fact, by, you know, twisting the little segment out, as soon as people saw the longer version, it made Alan Grayson look worse. Granted, let's also stipulate that, you know, we are talking, you know, Beltway ease, and you know, we're looking at this through a microscope. Down in the district, you know, it's hard to say how much this necessarily, you know, who's looking at this closely.
Is this going to be the defining issue at the local level?
Pardon me?
We don't know if it's going to be the defining issue at the local level. You know, by
that's
November.
Right. It's the one that interests us the most. It's the one that feeds into, you know, discussions. We've had discussions. I mean, the blogosphere back to, what, 2002, 2003, whenever you want to trace back the beginning of the, you know, what conservatives would call the angry left, what progressives would call, you know, fighting progressives, or, you know, the Netroots phenomenon. You know, Grayson is – it's interesting enough, I suppose, that, what, eight years later – I think I'd say Alan Grayson is the only, you know, elected member of the, you know, of the Congress who is, you know, this openly, you know, like a like a progressive blogger. You've got certainly other, you got other progressives in there, but nobody who's quite mixing it up the way that, you know,
no one else in the swing district.
Digsby. Well, certainly no one else in this. That's sure. Again, Pete Starr.
I think we have a couple certainly. Other congressmen that might fall into that category, but
maybe so. Yeah.
But Grayson is the only one that's you know who's first year, and is having his first splash on the national stage, be guided by a certain progressive blogosphere way of thinking.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Whether it's a good test or not, yeah, I don't even know if we'll know that after November whether win or lose.
Well, speaking of blogger critiques,
yes.
We've had I don't know what the right word is, but it's a recycled spat between a portion of the liberal blogosphere and the White House. Mm-hmm. We saw a round of this when Robert Gibbs took a swipe at the quote unquote professional left. And in the past few days, you had both Vice President Biden and President Obama in a few different forums essentially mm-hmm. Directly address disgruntled progressives and to say, quote, buck up. We've done good things here. We've moved the ball forward. I know we haven't got everything that we wanted, but the presidential term is not over. Governing is hard. Compromise has to be made, but we're pointing in the right direction. And now it's time to pull back together and, you know, get excited about this midterm campaign.
And stop whining.
I'm sorry?
And stop whining.
But Biden did say that, correct?
He did. Biden said that. That's
Biden
right.
Said, I don't think Obama said that, but.
No, but Obama, Biden, Axelrod, you know, other administration figures, definitely a lot of frustration coming out of there right now.
Right, right. I think Biden said that a bit with a smile, but nevertheless.
Could be. You know what? When you look at it in a headline, you can't
right.
tell that.
Well, right. And obviously, the way you know, a number of bloggers took it was far, far, far more negative.
Sure.
And so it's really not getting those bloggers to say, okay, I will stop whining now.
Right. Not at all.
And you had a searing post by Peter Dow. Peter Dow, who was internet-famous blog strategist. He wrote a very notable post in the Bush era called The Triangle, which tried mm-hmm. to encapsulate how blogs and the media and the political establishment can be sort of three legs of a stool and be very powerful. And in the Obama era, he's been regularly, I think, striving to be a thoughtful critic of Obama's presidency, mm-hmm. Not a knee-jerk critic. He certainly would take pains to say there's things that Obama's done that he's happy with. while often stressing, you know, some negative parts. So he has a post we called "How a Handful of Liberal Bloggers Are Bringing Down the Obama Presidency," where he highlights
a little tongue in cheek as well, right?
What?
A little tongue in cheek.
Not tongue in cheek, although in a follow up post he's tried to stress that bringing down is not brought down.
Right.
He's not saying that the presidency is over.
Right.
But he is trying to make the point that there are a number
like,
of
really bringing me down, man. More like that.
yeah. But he's trying to highlight that there are a number of prominent bloggers in Dow's view have disproportional influence, and he specifies Glenn Greenwald at Salon, Digby, Jerome Armstrong at MyDD, Marcy Wheeler, part of the Fire Dog Lake Empire.
Hampshire herself, of course.
Fire Dog Lake has sort of lots of sub-blogs, and hers is Empty Wheel. And said that their primary critique is not just for being generally cranky, not just complaining about everything that the administration has done, but that they have very specific and principled objections, predominantly on civil liberties issues, issues like state secrets, torture, indefinite detention, and whatnot. And that is what is primarily driving their critique, and they're not going to be persuaded by admonishments to buck up and stop whining. Peter's gotten a lot of critiques. So that's what the people even mentioned, and Glenn Greenwald himself said any critique of Obama that doesn't start with the lack of jobs and with the lack of jobs doesn't make sense. And other folks would say, how can you put this much prominence on a handful of bloggers? I mean, most people don't even read these bloggers, even if they have a certain size audience. But Ezra Klein at least noted in the response, period, I was right that liberal bloggers are getting under Obama's skin. And so it raises the question, because Obama clearly is responding to these folks. Peter even mentioned at the end of the Rolling Stone interview that Obama just gave, he went out of his way after the interview was over to go back in the room and right. make a final point about how folks have to pull together at this point. So I think I haven't seen anyone make this point. This is my own.
Okay.
Clearly there's an argument that these bloggers are getting under the president's skin, and that's leading him and Biden to make these statements that just keep the divisions alive. I think it's possible that the White House knows full well what it's doing and thinks it can use this sliver of the left. I mean, if this is a theory, I'm not saying this is
sure.
the way it is. Say these folks don't represent the bulk of the base and the bulk of the left. We can play the rest of the base off of them to say, don't let these folks bring us all down. So it's not necessarily trying to get the Glenn Greenwalds of the world to salute. It's get everybody else to not be on Glenn Greenwald's bandwagon.
Right.
Now, there's some evidence out there that Dem enthusiasm is starting to tick up again. I don't know if you can credit to what Obama is saying or fear of the Tea Party or what have you. But I don't think we know quite yet what the base is going to do and how all this debate is going to impact the final turnout.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
That was a long rant on my part.
It was.
I didn't mean to catch you off guard.
No problem. I wasn't expecting it to end there, I suppose. You know, that's an interesting question. So I don't know that I have a sophisticated answer to that.
While you're chewing that out, I'll just mention Boo Man Tribune's response to this, because Boo Man as a blogger is definitely on the pro-Obama side.
Mm-hmm.
He said, now if I'm an activist for civil liberties or gay rights or immigration reform, then I'm not necessarily going to trim my sails to apologize for Democrats when they disappoint me. Someone has to keep the pressure on. On the other hand, on all these issues, I know that the Republican Party is not an ally, and that anything that empowers them is harmful to my cause. And I know that there's no third party on the horizon that's going to ride to the rescue. It does not profit me to argue that both sides are inadequate because there are no alternatives. One side is better than the other, and depressing turnout for the better side is a boon for the worse side. I know you that I have more influence on the administration when I criticize them, because I deal with them fairly. If you wake up each day looking for a weakness to exploit, the administration begins to see you as an adversary and dismisses everything you have to say. But if you give them credit for their accomplishments and defend them against their unfair attacks, they actually notice when you change course and offer some stinging rebukes. It's really as simple as the boy who cried wolf fairy tale. Now, Peter Dow would certainly argue that he does that, but it may be that people that, since his critiques are far more prominent, that people might not notice when he is giving the administration a pat on the back.
But do you think that the Hampshires and the Greenwalds will eventually be kind of relegated to the background in the broader, you know, among the broader left?
Well, I've always argued that they don't represent the entire left, and it's overly simplistic to pick any one or two voices instead of the left.
Would you say that it's fair to say that they are, more principled than those who are sticking by Obama or, you know, really?
I would not make that argument. I think there are arguments you could say that either the more pro-Obama folks, the anti-Obama folks, are both being principled, and you could say that both are being calculating or misguided in some way. I had a back and forth with Glenn Greenwald on Twitter because I thought he was being very unfair in his characterization of Elena Kagan. He said that there's never been a judicial nominee that we've known less about than Elena Kagan, and I responded on Twitter, what about John Roberts? And he went back at me and said, we knew 100 times more than John Roberts, and I thought that was absolutely insane. So, I mean, does that mean Glenn is unprincipled or just wrong? You know, that's a subjective debate. But I sort of think you could argue that some of these folks have been more negative than they had to be without losing their principles. And you could be generally pro-Obama and not chuck your principles out the window even if you disagree with them on one or two things. It's all a question of trying to take as much into perspective and context as you can.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost as if Obama is saying, like, hey, I know you are upset with me, but please don't take that out on, you know, the members of your district or your particular senator. It's a tricky line.
Well, it's a question of what priority you put. I mean, if you feel that if Obama violates principles regarding state secrets, then all is lost and democracy is dead, then yeah, you're not gonna come around. But if you're gonna say, hey, it's important that we invested in green energy and he's created 3 million jobs and he's supporting justices that are going to protect reproductive rights, so on and so forth. You could say, principle is not a completely mathematical thing. There's lots of issues out there. There's lots of principles to adhere to. There's lots of this world that are important, and you're always weighing pros and cons whenever you're making any kind of electoral choice.
And I'll tell you, I think it's interesting to look at this in terms of, say, comparing this situation to 1994, where, you know, Bill Clinton was not as successful as Obama in doing some progressive things in the first couple of years of his administration, and then when 94 came in and Republicans took over everything, Bill Clinton, certainly with the help of Dick Morris, you know, refocused his presidency such that I've heard, you know, any number of Democrats over the years say that Bill Clinton is the best Republican president that we've ever had.
Right.
You know, little clever things like that. And I wonder if maybe the election of 2010 is also a tipping point in the Obama administration, because here you have Obama, who had in the past tried to portray himself as both a progressive and a moderate, something Bill Clinton had also tried to do, and which, you know, nationally winning Democrats tend to have to do in some case. But the tension of that combined with the partisan makeup of Congress can certainly impact what the president's policies are going to be. So it's almost like, you know, it's almost like Obama is saying, you know, please don't be too upset about what we didn't get done, because, you know, there would not be nearly as much movement on progressive issues if Republicans took over even just one of the chambers of Congress. But also, maybe there's, you know, unspoken subtext here that If Democrats don't retain power, I'm going to have to go triangulate myself.
Well, there's already been inklings out there that after Election Day, no matter what happens at the ballot box, you know, there clearly will be more Republicans in Congress than today. We just don't know how many more.
That's right.
And if they'll actually take over a body of Congress. You have the White House's deficit commission scheduled to finish their work in December. And Obama has said repeatedly that we've done a lot of stimulus spending, but we have to pair that with longer-term and medium-term deficit reduction. And there's definitely a debate over, you know, when is it economically safe to start making that pivot. At least rhetorically, it looks like Obama is going to start talking much more about deficit reduction after December. And that could definitely cause a lot of strain, I think, with a broader portion of the progressive base than than Greenwald and Jane Hampshire, who are arguably primarily motivated by issues of civil liberties. Not that they haven't talked about these other issues, but arguably that's their number one. So, you know, some might call that a form of triangulation. I don't think Obama is doing it as bluntly as Clinton did. I think Obama is trying to walk both of these lines at the same time from the get-go. He can push the deficit reduction angle and still keep pushing on the climate front and on the immigration front and on the gay rights front, because they're definitely unfinished business there. But I certainly think you're going to hear more and more deficit reduction talk after Election Day.
It'll probably be easier to do something about that, that's for certain. Of course, the lame duck session in November will be, assuming that it... So I'm going to assume that the House goes Republican. I doubt the Senate does, but I wouldn't be surprised either way. Post-election, you know, lame duck session, then it could be the progressives' last stand. I mean, it would be certainly is the last opportunity that, you know, they would have to get those things through, since a certain number of those House members would be, and Senate, you know, members would be on their way out.
Well, that would presume Obama wouldn't get reelected.
End of 10. Say about Obama being reelected?
I misunderstood you.
No problem.
Yeah, the lame duck would be the last chance to get certain things done before Congress gets more conservative. But I don't think anyone's expecting some of these bigger hot button issues like Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or maybe Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That might have the 60 votes.
That came very close.
But cap and trade and immigration reform, that stuff's not gonna that's not gonna happen in the lame duck.
No, I agree with that.
But Ray, a little bit long on time. I just like to do one or two more topics if we can. One more thing on the progressive base front. This Saturday or tomorrow, by the time this airs, is going to be the One Nation rally. And this is an attempt to get the base enthusiastic again, to show that the progressive base is more broader than the Tea Party rallies have been. They clearly want to beat the size of the Glenn Beck rally in August, but they've been a little eclipsed by the John Stewart rally, which is happening at the end of October. The Huffington Post, for example, has announced it's going to actually provide buses for the John Stewart rally. They've done nothing of the sort to help the One Nation rally, which is more directly political. But you are seeing some blog commentary about One Nation. You had Meteor Blade, the Daily Kos, talk about the various Daily Kos diarists that are rallying folks to get on the bus. You have the Washington Independent talk about how the long-term unemployed, known as the 99ers, are going to be organizing around that rally. And you had David Neward over at Crooks and Liars talk about how Glenn Beck is responding to the rally by calling everybody a bunch of Marxists.
Which there are some Marxists who have signed on for it. That Crooks and Liars actually acknowledged that point, too.
Well, there are about 300-plus organizations there. I think Answer is one of the organizations. And Answer, I find a totally loathsome organization. I believe they do have Marxist ties.
We are just a few weeks removed from the Glenn Beck rally, where you know lefties were out there in force trying to find you know the most racist T-shirts they could. It's the exact same game that gets played on both sides.
Beck was saying in his comments,
right?
When the overwhelming majority of the groups organizing this event believe in Marxism, then yes, we can judge you by the company you keep, and that is just a lie.
Oh yeah, well. I'm not terribly surprised he said that either. He's an entertainer too. I find that aspect frustrating on both the left and the right. It's the same thing as I find the name calling, you know, or at least dumb name calling. If it's done well, go for it. But where Glenn Beck is clearly just saying something that he knows to not be true, or something that he you know wishes were true, it's at that point. I'm not going to say anything about that.
This is primarily being organized by the NAACP and the AFL-CIO and the National Lesbian Gay Task Force. It's very possible that Glenn Beck wants you to think that the NAACP is a bunch of Marxists. You know, you used to say Martin Luther King was a Marxist. Glenn Beck at least got conservatives to stop saying that. But
I mean, Julian Bond is certainly nobody's free market libertarian.
That is true. I'll grant you that point. And finally, we've talked a lot about strains on the left, but there are some strains on the right that have come up this week with Jim DeMint doing a number of power plays. I mean, earlier he helped get Christine O'Donnell nominated in Delaware, and that got a lot of established Republicans very angry. Mm-hmm. Now he announced this past week that every piece of legislation had to be cleared through his office, or he was going to put, a one-man hold on everything. Mm-hmm. And this led Politico to do a story talking. And I guess on top of that, Jim DeMint sent out a fundraising email where he attacked other Republican senators for keeping Lisa Murkowski in her committee seat. Even though they dislodged her from her leadership position after she decided to run as an independent write-in candidate in Alaska. Mm-hmm. The Think Progress roundup the quotes from the Politico story. Kit Bond saying, "I personally think it's very counterproductive, totally inaccurate." Asked where DeMint's message was helpful to the GOP. K.B. Hutchinson simply said no. John Thune being talked about as a presidential candidate, now saying, "I would take issue with that, that DeMint's overstating what happened as far as people bending over backwards what DeMint said was that colleagues did, quote, everything, unquote, in their power to help Murkowski's writing campaign against Miller by helping her stay in her a committee seat. Mm-hmm. I know DeMint, I think, has a lot of favor in the conservative blogosphere. Are there conservative bloggers that are weighing in on any of this?
Yeah, I mean, when you first said there that there was, some consternation on the right, if I heard that correctly, because I would not say is the case. I would say that there's consternation among Republicans, and more specifically Senate Republicans. I think DeMint is doing himself some big favors with the conservative blogosphere at the moment. He's always been a bit of a favorite, and Christine O'Donnell, she's taken up a lot of oxygen the last few weeks. But you'll find a lot of conservatives who are, at the very least, uncomfortable to have to, stand behind her or just kind of wish she would go away because she's embarrassing for other reasons. Joe Miller, on the other hand, though, is, people are very supportive of him and very upset at Murkowski. So, this entitlement that she feels to try to run again on a write-in campaign. So Jim DeMint is getting, is getting some discussion as perhaps being, a 2012 contender. Rehan Shalom.
He might challenge McConnell for majority leader if Republicans actually took, or maybe minority leader if they don't take over the Senate.
I would not be surprised. Yeah. I was just going to say that, Rehan Shalom, who does contribute to Blogging Heads, had a column of the Daily Beast where he said that DeMint has emerged as one of the fiercest, most effective champions of the Tea Party movement. And while the national media fixates on Sarah Palin as the face of the Republican right, it is far easier to imagine DeMint emerging as a hard-edged Republican presidential nominee. And to following up on that, Daniel Larrison, who contributes to The American Conservative, he wrote, It's possible that in DeMint's recent maneuvers to block last-minute legislation, that this session will not be perceived as striking a blow for good government, but viewed instead as a sort of insider manipulation DeMint's allies claim to loathe. But perhaps activists won't mind as long as DeMint keeps breaching Senate protocols and annoying his colleagues. DeMint's take-no-prisoners approach satisfies his supporters, but he's making a lot of enemies along the way. And I'd say those enemies are strictly in the Senate. In that case, I think he's probably, he may well try for the leadership, but considering the clubby nature of either party in the Senate, could be trouble. But he doesn't need senators as much out on the road. What he needs are enthusiastic supporters. And I think there's a really good point to be made that Jim DeMint is perhaps the, if Christine O'Donnell is beyond the pale and Sarah Palin is mildly embarrassing, then Jim DeMint is, he's in the sweet spot. He's very conservative. He hits all those policy issues, but he also appears to be a sane individual and could be a dark horse for 2012.
I won't quibble on your characterization of sane right now, as I have a completely hysterical baby I think I need to attend to.
Oh, understood.
I don't know if you can hear that or not.
I can't, but you must. Yes.
But it's great to talk to you again, Bill.
Great as well. Thanks for having me back.
Tell folks again where they can find your stuff.
I'm on Twitter as at William Butler, and I write the blog thewikipedian.net, all about how Wikipedia works. And, williambutler.com is also, it's up there. There's stuff to look at, but it needs a lot of work. So we can edit that out
okay. Or
not. All right.
Great to talk to you, Bill.
Great to talk to you. Thanks much. Bye-bye.